Wednesday, March 27. The Sports Machine with Slim. Been wondering how I want to start the show off. I know what I wrote last night. I'm going to read from my notebook. You Bruins doubters can take a sniff of my rear end. That's what I said last night, and it's what I still feel this morning. Did you watch the game? Like I told you guys? Like I've been saying on the airwaves for months? How I'm battling with the fans on social media, quote-unquote fans on social media, who have no mental fortitude, no ability to think positively, defeatist attitudes, all Boston area fans, or the majority of them, except the folks that are smart enough to tune into this show, smart enough to listen to me. I mean, that's me patting myself on the back. The Boston Bruins go into Florida last night and play a team, the Florida Panthers, that we're battling against in the standings, the team that knocked us out of the playoffs last year, a team, Florida, as I heard in the first period from Jack Edwards, for people that don't know, Florida went up in like the first minute of the game, 1-0. I didn't even get to see the goal. I was upstairs with the kids. I come down, I turn on the TV. Oh, great, a minute and a half in, we're already down 1-0, whatever. I got confidence because I've watched the team all year, and I see the team has toughness. And I hear Jack Edwards say that Florida this season has scored the first goal in 37 games that they've played. And they had lost in regulation only one of those games. Florida had scored first in 37 games this year. They lost exactly one in regulation before last night. The Bruins go on to a 4-3 victory. I'll read from my notes. I got Thomas Poe calling in the second segment. We might have Sully calling in after that. The Bruins fans want to jump in now, and I'm sure all the Bruins quote-unquote fans on social media are just like beside themselves. One, they're either making excuses for why the Bruins still won't be able to do it, and thereby saying they have absolutely no credibility about hockey whatsoever, no knowledge. I don't care if these are fans who've been watching for 50 years and I just rolled out of bed as a pink hat this season. Those people are not the people you want to be listening to. And if you watched the team last night, you'll understand why I'm actually extremely irritated at Boston area fans that have absolutely no confidence in the sporting teams. The fans are the reasons we're losing. And I know it sounds crazy. You weak-minded fans in New England who are just spoiled brats, used to Tom Brady showing up and rolling out the red carpet and winning and cheering, "Tommy, I love you! Patriots, yay!" This is why we still have competing radio stations on right now. Go flip your dial. Go put on EEI in 98.5 and we go to commercial. Go ahead if you want to. And I'm going to tell you what you're going to hear. Them talking about the Patriots draft or the dynasty. Like, you losers. It's 4 years post-Belichick. We've just been worse every single year. What are you talking about the Patriots today for as I'm driving in listening to EEI? Are you kidding me? This Bruins team is immense. So physical and tough. And I don't care. I will say, we've been getting beaten up in fights. If you watched last night, did we win a single fight? There were three or four of them. Did we win a single one? The last fight I can remember, Wotherspoon in a week or 2 weeks ago, he got his tail kicked. And you know what? It doesn't matter, dude. We're not there to fight as a hockey team. We're there to win a hockey game. And to win in the playoffs, you need to be physical with your checks. And if you watch the Bruins this year play against all the best teams in the NHL, we're all over them. I don't have the stat written down in front of me, but to open the game, I believe Florida outshot the Bruins 8-1 to start. By the end of the game, the Bruins had outshot them in total. It was something like 28-21 or something like that. And I'm like, dude, the Bruins outshot them like 27-12 or so. I forget the numbers. We annihilated that team last night. We annihilated that team after the first 10 minutes of the game. The first 10 minutes of the game, Florida controlled it, no doubt. It was the game of the year from the regular season, people. And what irritates me the most as I thought about it last night is with the Bruins and Florida. Last year, the Bruins lost to Florida in 7 games. We had a 3-1 advantage. And yet all I hear on social media from the naysayers in the Bruins fan kingdom is that the Bruins aren't good enough. They're not going to do it this year. And I look and I go, wait a minute, Florida last year went to the finals. They went to the Stanley Cup finals. They lost to a ridiculous wagon of a Las Vegas team. But Florida made it all the way there. We took Florida to 7 games. And now you're coming through this year in the regular season, and we're one of the top teams, and you're saying, as those other fans have been saying on social media, and even on our airwaves, we've had multiple people saying it. Baker, Jane, you've been in the studio. Both of those people have been on here saying, oh, the Bruins don't have it. I don't know what you're talking about. The Bruins, you're questioning their toughness by saying, you're not questioning their talent. We went to 7 games against Florida last year in the playoffs. That was the team that went to the finals. So you're not saying you're saying what you're not saying we don't have the talent to compete against Florida. Of course we do. We went to 7 games with them. We're up 3-1. It's you're questioning their mental toughness and desire. And last night they laid it on the ice all game long. And let me go to my notebook as I take a deep breath, because I remember Charlie McAvoy getting sticked in the face right in front of the net. It wasn't, I don't think, intentional. He took a stick right to the face, dropped down. That man coming back later in the game is showing you why he's a top three defenseman in hockey. I don't want anybody else on my team besides Charlie McAvoy from a talent perspective. In an intelligence perspective, at the end of the game, it's the third period, and a dude's trying to bait McAvoy into a fight because the Bruins had just drawn a penalty. And the guy cheap shots McAvoy, and he's trying to get McAvoy to have to be off the ice during a power play. And McAvoy looks at him and is like, I'm smarter than you, dude. I'm not going to fight you right now. It was a testy game last night. I think a lot of players would have responded in that situation. McAvoy just kept his calm and his cool. And, let's just reset this. Unbelievable. I'm so happy for the Bruins tonight. Tonight, for what they did last night. And to shut all the fans up out there who have been doubting this team. And they've been wrong. And if you want to call the show today to say how wrong you've been, you're certainly welcome. 603-224-1450 is the number. 603-224-1450. In period one last night, Charlie McAvoy, just an absolutely nasty one-timer, ties it up 1-1 with 2 minutes left in the first period. Remember, I said Florida got out early. The Bruins tie it up. We go to the break 1-1. Second period, Lindholm gets in the fight. And he gets beaten up a little bit, but I will say he got in the first blow. He kind of whacked the guy right in the face to get the thing started, and it was just nice to see. That dude responded. I don't even remember who it was. Lindholm got taken down. He got beaten up a little bit, not terrible, but I just like the toughness. Lindholm, I loved, hey, we're here to mix it up, dude. We're not here just to watch you guys out-tough us. We're going to be right back in your face. And it was an all-game-long thing for the Bruins. I loved what I saw out of Peak, this new guy, Andrew Peak, that the Bruins traded for at the very end of the trade deadline there. And I think this guy's an asset for us. I think he's been doing exactly what we need somebody to do on the defensive side of things, is have some poise and confidence when trying to take the puck and clear it out of our zone without icing it, without turning it over. What I'm seeing from Peak is he's doing a heck of a job with this these last couple of games, especially last night. I wrote 3 or 4 times. I like what this guy's doing. Marchand gets in a fight. He's 5'10", 180, something like that. Marchand fought some 6'4", 240 guy. That's who you've been doubting the toughness of, people. And it's upsetting. And I hope you're going to come to your senses and get on board the freight train that is the Boston Bruins. We're going to go to commercial. We'll welcome back with Thomas Poke here in a minute. You're listening to The Sports Machine with Slim, WKXL Radio's 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, New Hampshire, talkradio.com. Listen to these words from Jim Montgomery, head coach of the Boston Bruins, from ESPN.com. It gives us confidence in 3 weeks when it starts for real, Boston coach Jim Montgomery said, referring to the playoffs. We were down three times. We kept coming back. So we can believe in our process, believe in our identity, and keep playing. Brad Marchand, I thought it was a good effort by our group. It was a playoff type game there. The teams played hard. They didn't really have any holes. So it was a good character win. I love those quotes. I love to listen to Thomas Poe come on the airwaves here with us here on the Sports Machine with Slim. Thomas knows his hockey. Thomas, what did you think about that game last night?
Hi, Jim. No, it was awesome. I mean, hey, I'm pretty sure they wanted to get the first 30 seconds back, but other than that, the game was great, right? With everything that's going on, like the little basket that they went through the day before because coach was all aggravated, and then you come out in the first 30 seconds, you give up a goal. That could have turned ugly real quick.
Exactly.
But no, they worked hard. They stuck with it. I thought Charlie had a great game. He was physical, obviously scored a goal, had another assist on the second one. Like, he was a dominating force out there, so that was great to see. Obviously, you're in the hunt for, you know, first place in the East, which they took over, I believe, or maybe they had a point behind the Rangers, one or the other. But they're right there for it, right? So, you know, if you look at the overall series, which I didn't know, I kind of cheated and looked at it today. I mean, they're 3-0 against the Panthers this year. So that's kind of surprising. The Panthers have a good team, but, you know, the Bruins have been playing great.
Saturday night, Thomas, I watched those Panthers play against the New York Rangers, and the Panthers had a one-goal lead at the end of the third period, and the Rangers came back. They tied it up, and then they went on to win in a shootout here. So the Panthers have lost two games where they had the lead later in the third period. I'm wondering, do you think all the Florida Panthers fans are all running around in a state of, like, total panic, talking about how their team isn't tough enough and not good enough to win in the playoffs this year?
Yeah, you mean all the New England people that live down there now?
Yeah, right? Maybe it's the same type. It's the same tree, Thomas. You got it. It all stems from New England.
Well, no, it's. I'm sure they're talking about it, right? The Bruins went through that chase, you know, a few weeks back, and they were struggling, and they got through it, and now they're better for it. But I'm sure, you know, they're going through it. I'm sure Florida wants to be better. Like, the last 10 games, they're 4-5-1. Which, you know, going into the playoffs, we talked about it yesterday. The Bruins don't want that. Well, neither does Florida, right? You want to go in with a good feeling. But, you know, they have a good team. They have a really strong goalie, and if he can replicate what he did last year in the playoffs, they're going to be a contender again. But what we do see is the East is really strong, right? There's a lot of teams that, you know, right from the first puck drop off the playoffs, it's going to be a battle. Whether you finish first and get one of the wild card spots, or you finish second in our Atlantic Division and have to play the Maple Leafs. Either way, it's going to be a tough one.
You got it, Thomas. And this is what I've been saying the whole time is the East, yes, okay, good teams. We are competitive with anyone. That's been my point from a talent perspective, and I believe this team has demonstrated throughout the entire regular season from a toughness perspective. And last night, in the game of the regular season, the game of the year for the Bruins, because we had lost two games in a row, and now we're going on the road to play Florida, a team you know is ready to play. They're going to be jacked up. They knocked us out of the playoffs last year. The Bruins come out, and we just totally respond, even after, like you said, the coach lays the team out verbally in practice, forces them to do speed skating drills and this stuff, and then in the first minute of the game, we come out and give up a goal. That's where a weak-minded team folds up shop. A tough team battles back and wins. That's what the Bruins are.
Oh, 100%. You're definitely right. That could have gone real quick the other way at the beginning, but they didn't. You know, they worked hard, and they stuck with it, and I think they'll be all right. I think they really have a strong team. I think it's a little different than what was going on last year. It wasn't, even though they're still at the very top of the Eastern Conference, it wasn't as easy and as smooth as it was last year during the regular season.
I feel
so it'll be fun to see.
I feel that this team is better equipped to score and play physical hockey in the playoffs, Thomas, because of guys like, I mean, Brazeau is coming in there. I feel like Peak has instantly ingrained himself into my mind as like a reliable defenseman that I feel is going to be able to clear the puck without icing it and without turning it over. Like, there's a couple of players we've added on this team. It's in addition to Brazeau, just guys that I think are going to be physical. You could see the physicality. There was tons of checking last night.
100%. I mean, that's what the playoffs is going to be, right? Like, I long, long time ago, but I do remember when I signed in New York out of college and I played the last couple of games of the year, we're right at the bottom. Those games in the regular season when the teams that are out of the playoffs play are night and day different to those teams that are in the playoff and in for a hunt. And when you look at Florida and you look at the Bruins, you look at the Maple Leafs, the Rangers, like, when they play against each other, like, it's a different level. There's a couple extra gears than when you look at teams like, you know, Columbus or Ottawa or Montreal. They're good teams, but just not the same level.
Let me ask you about the goalie play, because we know Swayman had been struggling over his last handful of games. Okay, last night, as I watched in the first period, I saw him make some questionable plays with the stick handling from the goalie side of things. And that's something, as a Bruins fan, as I've watched in the playoffs through the years, Thomas, I didn't think Tuukka Rask was ever very good with the puck, like handling it, clearing the zone, and knowing when to come out of the net and when to stay in, etc. With Swayman, I've always felt his skills with the stick have been excellent. But his judgment last night in the first period to me seemed questionable. And I'm like, what's going on here? But for the second and third period, I thought he was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for goalies, right? Number one, like, but you're right. The first couple of touches he had behind the net, he could have easily been 2-0 or 3-0,
easily,
right?
Yes.
And there was a couple of things there when Tkachuk picked it off of him and almost wrapped it in. But you know, I mean, those things gonna happen. I mean, if you keep playing the puck more like he likes to do, and same with Ullmark, they're good at it normally. So obviously, it helps out your defenseman if you're doing it, which is great for the team game transition. Every defenseman is happy when your goalie is good at playing the puck. But, you know, those plays are going to happen. And, you know, he settled down a little and there was no issues with the second and third. So I wouldn't be too worried about him.
He has the ability, Thomas. This is the thing when we watch, like, this guy is, he's capable of winning a Stanley Cup. Like, I'm not saying he has to do it all by himself, but he's capable of being in net in a game-clinching, you know, series-clinching game in the Stanley Cup Finals. He's that good. And as long as he makes the right decisions in the heat of the moment, that's like, do I come out of the net? Do I go get this puck? Where do I throw it? It's like, just don't make the big mistake. That's all. And last night, like you said, it could have happened. You just don't want to have those instances coming up too often.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you're spot on with him. I think he's obviously, we have a great tandem and both goalies are awesome. But, you know, he's definitely the future for the Bruins. And I'll leave myself out there, but I think he will win us a Stanley Cup down, whether it's this year or in a couple of years down the road. They're good enough a team, and he's definitely good enough a goalie to do that.
So I have, whether you like it or not, kind of infiltrated your text feed on occasion here during the Bruins games and last night I said, Swayman looking like a rookie out there. Now we're cranking it up a bit. This is fun. And I said, a text to you, 8:15. I said, this is where we need a tough dude to come in and kick some tail. Like, I feel the Bruins have to win one of these fights. Like, you know, if Milan Lucic was on the team, I think he would have already dropped some dudes. But I'm struggling to see, like, who's our fighter and enforcer come the playoffs. And I think we need somebody, Thomas. You can't have Brad Marchand out there at 5'10 and change fighting dudes that are 6'4 and getting throttled to the ice.
Well, I think it gets the team moral up a little bit when your captain's doing that stuff. I don't care how tall he is. He's a tough kid. And he's not going to be the biggest fighter and the toughest guy, but he changed definitely stuff around. Obviously, we have Trent Frederick, and we did trade for Pat Maroon. Pat Maroon's been around. I know he's not playing right now, but he'll be back at some point, and that's definitely that type of guy that he is. He would help out Trent Frederick with that regard as well. but Pat Maroon's definitely one of the tougher guys in the league. Big part, hopefully we'll see. I mean, obviously that's something the Florida Panthers tried to do yesterday, right? Like, they tried to go out there, they tried to play super physical, they tried to get guys in their face. Obviously, they're looking at the stats too. Again, the Bruins are now 3-0 against them this year, and we'll have one more coming up on April 6th, which will definitely be a fun game to watch just because of everything that's going on, fighting for the last position there. And hey, hopefully Pat Maroon's back.
You nailed it, Thomas. I set you up there. I forgot all about Pat Maroon. And when you said that, I started to get like goosebumps on my body. I'm like, oh, yeah, wait a minute. We have that guy. And that just gives me more confidence in the Bruins because their front office knew we needed a dude like that. It's all coming together this year, Thomas. Can you see it?
100%. Even though, I mean, he's just a good player in the playoffs. And with his experience, too. Hey, the guy won 3 Stanley Cups. It was never been him as the number one guy, but hey, if you're on a team and you win 3 of those in a row, you know how to win hockey games. So it'll let his experience and locker room presence will definitely help the Bruins, and they're a team to reckon with. I mean, we looked at it, some of the losses, and they only have a few, right?
Yep.
But the wins they get against the good teams, and the good teams are the ones we're going to see in the playoffs. So that's just looking right. Like, I don't care if they lost a game against Ottawa or Montreal. Hey, they're beating the top teams, and those are the ones they're going
to
see in April.
Way to go, Thomas. That's how to bring it. Thank you today for calling the show. WKXL Radio, The Sports Machine with Slim on 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, NewHampshireTalkRadio.com. I could talk Bruins all day, especially with people that are still doubters. Give me a break. Team is awesome. Playoff run is going to be incredible this year. Get on board. On a side note here, I see on CNBC today an article, largest U.S. sportsbooks join forces to tackle problem gambling. The nation's largest online operators are coming together to form a group dedicated to responsible gaming practices. The seven operators, FanDuel, DraftKings, BetMGM, Penn Entertainment, Fanatics Betting and Gaming, Hard Rock Digital, and Bet365 will form the Responsible Online Gaming Association. And it goes in and talks about how gambling addiction is rising. It's estimated 2 million U.S. adults meet the criteria for a severe gambling problem. I'm looking up to see my hand raised as one of those 2 million. Another 5 to 8 million U.S. adults are considered to have a mild or moderate gambling problem. Well, I mean, why do you think that is? It's very addictive. You get, like, chemicals inside of your body that jump up and spike when you're excited and have adrenaline pumping through your body because, I mean, you're in it to win it, right? You're reacting. You're jumping around. You're cheering on your team. You're excited. And there's chemicals inside of your body, and your body becomes addicted to that chemical release. And so, I mean, there's a physical addiction that actually comes about from gambling. And, you know, you see the spread of it. It used to be illegal everywhere, and now it's legal, as I believe that it should be. People should have the choice. You do what you want to do. But there should be more and more education out there for people that have problems. That's what I've been saying on the airwaves for months now, right? 3-4 months. And now you got the biggest companies coming out, joining together in a unified position to say, oh, hey, we're going to try and help people. Well, how are you going to do that exactly? Take some of your gambling winnings and, I guess, you know, put it out to places that can maybe help people. Because I honestly believe, hey, the gambling companies, they don't need to be making money from the addicts. They want to be there as providers for entertainment. There's plenty of money to be made in that arena. We don't need to be hurting people's lives with this, but obviously, look, people's lives are getting hurt. So it's a big topic, one that needs to be covered. I reached out to Senator Lou D'Alessandro, who I had on the show here in the past, and I told people I went over to meet with him. And, you know, looking to try and get some government funds diverted here to really to the radio station to play ads for New Hampshire Council of Problem Gambling, just so problem gambling, so that people know, like, hey, where to go if you got a problem? Who do I call? Where can I get real help? Have a discussion with a real person. And I know we had done a WKXL Spotlight episode. Ed Talbot, who's the head of that NHCPG, he's available at any time. Somebody needs some help, just go on Problem Gambling New Hampshire, type that into your favorite search engine, and you'll find a real live person at the NHCPG. You can reach out, and he knows what you're going through because he's been there. He told the story on our airwaves. And you know, I'm hoping, I sent a follow-up email this morning to Senator Lou D'Alessandro to say, hey, I think I can be a big asset in trying to help the people in New Hampshire with gambling problems. He didn't follow up, respond to my email that I sent a couple weeks ago. And, you know, I'm wondering what you think. So we'll see if I get a response on that. Also, we'll see if I get a response from Bruins Management. I'm mailing a letter to Bruins Management today. Hello, it is Saturday, March 23rd, and I'm doing something that I've never done before. This is my letter. There are four college basketball tournament games on right now. The Celtics are playing as well, yet I am turning the channel to hockey. The Florida Panthers are playing the New York Rangers. Why am I choosing to watch the hockey game when in the past I would always, always, always be watching hoops? Because I love the Bruins team we have this year. I host a sports talk radio show, blah, blah, blah. I talk Bruins every day on my show. Jim Montgomery is someone that I would love to interview on the show someday. We're an independently held station, and we're smaller than our competitors, but we love our Bruins. Would Coach Montgomery please consider coming on the Sports Machine with Slim sometime? And then I give my name and phone number and email. Jim Montgomery, the coach of the Bruins. Can I get him on the airwaves here for you real fans so we can have an honest talk about this Bruins team, the expectations, and what he as a coach can do to achieve success? We know he had success as a player, especially in the college ranks, 3 goals in period number 3 to lead the Maine Black Bears to a national title. That's kind of like a winner's pedigree. And I believe he's going to show that winner's pedigree in the playoffs this year. So I'm jacked up for the Bruins. For the Celtics, I had a long discussion yesterday with my brother Dave about just the Celtics and the mental toughness piece. If you listen to what I'm talking about with the Bruins, it's all based on mental toughness. I believe the players are tough. I believe the coach is tough. With the Celtics, I think we're lacking mental toughness. I mean, hasn't that been proven? You know, the physical side of things, the talent, we have that. We're the best team in the NBA. Most talented team, without a doubt. And they're the best team as far as, hey, going out and shoot the basketball, having vision, making passes. We beat the bad teams almost every single game by 20 points. It's like boring. The only time it's exciting is when we get up by 30 and then blow the lead. So everybody can be like, oh, this team's mentally weak. Is that the case this season? I mean, Drew Holiday, I don't believe he's mentally weak. Al Horford, no, I don't believe he's mentally weak either. And for his role this year, coming off the bench as a sixth man, I think it's an appropriate, you know, ask of him to deliver out of those type of minutes. To expect Al Horford to help us win a title in the starting five, you know, it's like, I don't care if he is kind of tough. I don't think he's got the ability. But with our starting five, when you put Porzingis, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Derek White, and Drew Holiday on the court, oh my, I mean, come on, who's the weak link? Seriously, who's the weak link defensively? If you're on the other side and we're going to go at somebody, Jaylen Brown, Drew Holiday, Derek White, Jason Tatum, Kristaps Porzingis, who's like 7'4". And if you watch, he's pretty darn good on the help defensive side of things. Like, our defense is awesome. And we know how good our offense is. This is why we've beaten, what, 3 teams by 50 points or more, set a record for an NBA regular season. How many 20-point wins have we had? Didn't we set a record or something the other day? But when it comes crunch time, this team wilts. The Boston Celtics, I mean, you've had your chances. It's the same core guys with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. In hockey, it's a distributed, you know, team system. Every player is getting on the ice for regular minutes for the most part. Like, if one guy doesn't do his job, you get exposed hardcore. And so when you're turning over your roster in hockey each year, as we have to a certain degree for this year, I mean, no Krejci, no Bergeron, right? Like, there's totally new guys. Are these new guys we've added tough? Well, we're going to find out. We're going to find out when the playoffs come with them. I say our top echelon guys are mentally tough. And Brad Marchand is a guy who, as I said last night, he demonstrates his toughness. He's 5'10", small, and he ain't running away from any challenges. He's taking on the 6'4", huge dude. Because it was just time, because Florida was playing a little dirty. But, you know, we were playing real physical with them, too. So, okay, we're going to do it. And that's how the Bruins guys all were. There were other fights as well during the night. I forget who else fought. But, like, and I don't think we won even one of them. But we were in their face all game long. We never backed down. And that's all you need to be as a hockey team. If you have a Pat Maroon ready to come in and say, okay, other team, you guys want to fight somebody? You can fight me. If you can win the fight in hockey, that helps. This is all I was saying last night. And I wrote down here with Marchand when he got in that fight, I sent a text to my mother and said, every player on that Bruins team needs to be ready to fight right now. Just because Marchand took the hit. And when you have a guy 5'10 willing to jump into that situation, if you're a teammate, you need to be able to jump in yourself too, if that's what it calls for. No craziness, just saying. And I saw that level of readiness from every single Bruins player that played last night. And everybody up their game, team win. Goalie does what they need to do. Bruins proved their toughness. The Boston Celtics, man, you blew a 30-point lead and you had a tie game with 2 minutes or so, 3 minutes or so. And Jason Tatum bringing the ball up the court, gets his pocket picked. The guy steals it, goes in the other end, scores two. Like, I don't know, Tatum. I mean, what do you want us to say as fans to you? What do you want? You know, I wonder if Jason Tatum would be upset with the criticism that he gets. But it's like, dude, what do you want people to say? You want us to lie to you and tell you that, like, you're doing great all the time? Or do you want us to say, hey, dude, it's kind of unacceptable when you're dribbling up the court with 3 minutes left, and a dude on the other team just picks your pocket and takes it in? That's unacceptable. And I would hope he would say it's unacceptable too, but I think he'd blame the refs. I'm not going to blame anybody for my bad picks in the NCAA tournament so far, but I've made some good ones too. Let's talk about it when we get back here. The Sports Machine with Slim, WKXL Radio. It's time to go college basketball action. 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. Before we get to the college basketball, let's do NBA real quick. Warriors beat the Heat without Jimmy Butler by 20. Lakers come back against the Bucks. They're down, I think, 18, something like that, in the fourth quarter. Lakers had no LeBron last night. They come back. They beat the Bucks 128-124 in double OT. The Bucks. They're our main challengers in the East, the Boston Celtics. Yeah. I mean, I guess somebody has to be, right? It ain't Cleveland. Cleveland's not beating the Celtics. It's not the Knicks. The Knicks are not beating the Celtics. It's like, all right, who's the biggest threat in the East? Well, Jimmy Butler and the Heat. Of course, we should be afraid of them. We might end up having to play them in the first round. A healthy fear. Not like afraid fear. Just a healthy fear, like it's time to be serious now. And you want to beat this team because they beat you last year. There has to be some anger and revenge factor going on. I guess I just don't see anybody in the East beating the Celtics, so how's it going to happen? Milwaukee Bucks? You just lost in double overtime against the Lakers without LeBron. Like, I don't know, that's kind of gut check time. And as I said the day Doc Rivers got hired on the air here, I said Doc Rivers is not an X's and O's coach. He's a motivator type of coach. He gets his guys to play harder and become a team. Well, guess what? That team already plays hard. Giannis already plays as hard as he can every time. And he demands that from his teammates. So hiring Doc Rivers is the wrong decision. And that will be proven out in time that I was correct on that. It was a horrible hire. I mean, I like Doc Rivers. Nice guy. Thank goodness he was here with the Celts. He helped us win the title. I love the dude. But he's the guy that you need to have either at the beginning stages, like when he won Coach of the Year with Orlando, when you're trying to turn things around and get guys to play with energy and believe in each other, even though they stink. Doc Rivers is great as a motivator there, or you bring him in as the coach of a team who has got the most talent and really just needs guys not to fight in fighting and stay on track. And that was what he had with the Celtics, with KG and Pierce and Allen, and so he got the W. Right on, but going to the box, like, it's just not the right fit, man. So we'll see. Maybe they pull a miracle, but I doubt it. Miracles in college basketball. And tomorrow we'll be talking a bunch more college hoops, and we're going to do it Friday as well because every game in the Sweet 16 is just real sweet. I mean, that's appropriately named, the Sweet 16. These games are awesome. Awesome. And, I mean, it starts out with UConn against San Diego State, and I see UConn favored by 11 points, and talking to my brother, he's like, you know, UConn's just better than San Diego State. And I'm like, I agree. I know UConn looks unbeatable, but San Diego State, I just have the feeling they're the toughness team. And it's going to be a little bit of a different game for UConn because the biggest, toughest, strongest guy on the floor is going to be on San Diego State's roster, Lede. And I think if you get Klingham in some foul trouble early, things could happen. San Diego State has that revenge factor going on. They got knocked out of the tournament last year by UConn at the finals. So San Diego State ain't lacking for confidence, is all I'm going to tell you people. San Diego State is not lacking for confidence in this game Thursday night. They think they can win. They're accustomed to winning, and they've got the dude to believe in. Lede is an absolute monster. Now, if he tries to go one-on-one against Klingham during the game, I think there's big trouble to be had, right? Because Klingham's just too much taller. And Lede doesn't have those type of, you know, fluidity type moves where he's going to be able to go between his legs, step back, and then go to the hoop and leave Klingham standing in the dust. No, he's more slow, methodical, barrel towards the basket, but Klingham's still tall enough to swat his stuff into the second row. So how's San Diego State going to win on the defensive end? That's what I said the other day. Stick with Klingham. Lede, just body, physical him. Don't let him run around. Don't let him free for alley-oop dunks. That's the type of stuff UConn does. Then teams overreact. They start leaving their guy, their guarding out by the three-point line, kick out for three. UConn, they rain threes, and they get Klingham at the rim on alley-oops. That's what the team does. That's what they're looking for with all their motion. Just don't leave the three-point shooters open. It's pretty simple. Don't leave the three-point shooters open, and San Diego State got a shot. Illinois against Iowa State. My brother Dave, I talked to him yesterday. He says Iowa State, he thinks, has the type of defensive team that can maybe, you know, compete with the UConn because just going to be in their face all the time. And, okay, let's see. So UConn's path to the Final Four is not easy. It's just flat out not. Illinois, I think, is going to beat Iowa State, actually. Illinois looks to me like they got some talent. So UConn's got a game coming up where their toughness will be challenged, and then the game after that where I think talent and toughness will be standing in their way, either one of those teams, Illinois or Iowa State. If Iowa State beats Illinois, then, I mean, that's a heck of a win. Iowa State's hot. They smashed Houston by 30 in their conference, the Big 12 conference tournament final. Down below that, East, that was the East. And those games were being played in Boston. Pretty cool, huh? UConn at San Diego State and Illinois, Iowa State. Those are being held in Boston. Other side of the country. And Los Angeles, California, will have UNC squaring off against Alabama. Clemson against Arizona. I'm ACC all the way here. UNC and Clemson. Let's see. I've said from the beginning, Arizona here, I started off the season liking them. I do not think they're tough. I do not think they're mentally tough. I think Caleb Love is a net negative. And I think he'll have turnovers and just do some things that don't make any sense when face-to-face against Clemson, a team that has good guard defensive play and strong big dudes in the middle. So that's going to be a battle. What a matchup we have. Sweet 16 games all over. UNC against Alabama, you know that's going to be fun to watch up and down the court. Alabama's coming down there jacking threes. How's North Carolina going to play that game? North Carolina has a great defensive squad. Alabama is known for their offense. I will say, though, they competed against Grand Canyon. That Grand Canyon team on Sunday was as athletic as they come. And Alabama was running all over the place to get at those guys. Now, it's easy when you're playing against a team that can't shoot. So maybe Alabama, I'm overrating their defensive effort. I don't know about their ability. They didn't show much ability during the regular season. They also didn't show much effort in the SEC. So now that I believe they're playing with effort on the defensive end, you know, North Carolina needs to be worried. Because Alabama, if they get hot, they can rain threes. But North Carolina is going to be ready. Houston plays Duke. That's on Friday, right? Houston playing Duke. And if you watch Duke beat up on James Madison, I mean, they destroyed that team. James Madison was much smaller than Duke, so I don't give Duke a ton of credit for that because I don't think they're that tough. I think physically they're not that strong. I think Proctor plays a soft game and Filipowski's overrated. But James Madison had nobody to stand in Filipowski's way. Houston does. Houston's got a team of guys that are going to be tough up in your face. So what happens in that matchup? I mean, Duke, I believe, has more talent. But I got to go with Houston on the toughness side of things to advance. And then NC State's playing Marquette. What a game we got there Friday. Marquette, just if you watch Kolek, this guy can – he's a dribbling wizard, okay? And the way he gets his shot off in traffic, I'm like, dude, I don't think they're going to be able to block his shot in the pros either. I think Kolek could go in the NBA today and do a lot of good things. As a passer, he's got better vision than everybody else. Like, that matters. Can he hold his own on the defensive side of the court? I don't know. And he got exposed a little bit this past weekend. It was only his second game back, right, on Sunday there. He had been out due to injury in the Big East tournament, and then he comes back. So you got to give a guy a game or two to get their wind. But I thought he got exposed a little bit on the defensive side of things. And he just doesn't look like a big-time defender to me when I physically just looking at him. So NC State, they're hot. Abrams in the middle. I love Horn at the point guard position. Diarra, we talked about. This dude can rebound the basketball. I think NC State just feeling great about themselves. And I like their chances to upset Marquette. I like their chances a lot to upset Marquette on Friday. Let's see how that plays out. Because sometimes me liking a team a lot is not necessarily a good thing. Purdue and Gonzaga. And now we know Purdue's story. I think David said in the last 3 years they lost like a 13 team, a 14 team, and a 16 seed in the first round of the tournament. Is that right? It's just saying it sounds so ridiculous. I know they lost to the 16 last year, Fairleigh Dickinson. So Purdue comes out. They beat a Grambling team who was gritty. Right, they had won the play-in game against Montana State. And then they beat up on a Utah State team that's horrible. That Mountain West Conference, obviously horrible. Right? I mean, Utah State was the best team, I guess, in the regular season over there. As Baker said on the preview show last week, though, he thought actually that Colorado State was the best team in the Mountain West. And that turned out to be true in their win against Virginia. I think he was right on. So Utah State, I don't give Purdue a ton of credit for beating them, but I think they're going to match up very well against Gonzaga. I think Gonzaga's in a lot of trouble in that game. Then you got Creighton, Tennessee. Creighton should have gone to the Final Four last year, and I think they're going to make it this year. That's the way things work in life. You suffer a setback, you battle through, fight back, and then you get it. And it feels that much better when you're there. The Sports Machine with Slim is on WKXL Radio, weekdays 10 to 11, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. Those are the radio dials. You can always catch us live or on a delay here, nhtalkradio.com. We'll talk to you tomorrow.